Weaver of Context, Caroline Casey. This is such a potent show. The chart for today, our chart, is directly related to the election chart. So let me just say a little brief few things. So on election day at dawn in Washington, D.C., 11 Scorpio is rising, and so is the sun. Its image is the Renaissance Council, the meeting of the best and brightest, not by snootiness, but by dedication. And overhead is 19 Leo, Zuni Indians perform a ritual to the sun, and straight down is a white dove descends, bearing a message of peace. That's our chart today. That's the election chart on November 3rd. So, on a day where the worst and the best of America were animated, 45s tweet, maybe I'll delay the election, as Dorothy Parker says, what fresh hell is this? And John Lewis celebrated that we may feel ourselves honed against his dedication to be better citizens. And I watched the whole 4 hours. It was complex and worth it, right? So again, good trouble is our business, right? To be a good citizen. He really was an embodiment of speak truth, be power. When there were many, it goes on and on, but then, Obama really, took it on. And took on voting and honoring the beautiful diversity of our true citizens emerging to protest. And, with John Lewis, find a way out of no way, and fully facing danger and preparing and animating our strategy. And as Obama closed, what a gift he was to walk along with him. God bless this gentle soul who guided us. We go, yes. Powerful good. So we are in Fun Drive, and our wonderful guest will be joining us in a few minutes. There we go, because he's busy, Jeff Charlotte. We are Fun Drive, and so this is, as we know, all hands on deck, right? It's all hands on deck. And KPFA, in wonderful experiment, I like the ongoing thing. You've heard the premiums and press shows. So they say we're doing something a little different. We're giving audio as a gift to everyone who subscribes, no matter what you pledge, right? You get the Abolish Racism audio collection, which is great. And then also just if you pledge anything and email me, info@Coyote Network News, I'm going to be starting and animating the election chart and pulling in all of our skills, and I will send you some crucial, fun, inclusive thing. We go, oh, just... So, and what we have right now, before our guest joins us, Jeff Charlotte, Devote to Vote, we will be summoning the winds and the leaf blowers to sweep away all obstacles to honest voting on November 3rd. But just to animate, backstage to backstage, there's great potency. We want to engage everything. We want to face into the full danger. But also just, what is being proffered. The question, so many people ask of divinatory, what's going to happen? We go, that's completely not the question. What is available for us to cooperate? How do we face fully the danger and animate all of our skills, all of our pragmatic mystic skills, all of our envisioning followed by action, all of our visionary activism. So today, the sun in Leo, forms what's called a Thor's hammer pattern in the sky, which I thought was a little grumpy in its term, but then I, did a search on Thor's hammer, many mythological qualities. But it's the capacity, Thor's hammer swept corruption out of the halls of governance. We go, Oh, let's animate all that. So again, before we begin the formal part of our show, when our guest will join us, this is All Hands on Deck and encouraging you to call 1-800-439-5732. That's 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org, because this is where we gather. This is where we gather our counsel, our animation. Yes, I'm just checking this. Oh, never mind that. That's good. And let me introduce our guest who is standing by. How splendid. So we are very happy good trouble is our business. We welcome Jeff Charlotte, investigative culture doctor, journalist, author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power. I hosted him when that book came out. You know, may danger serve as incentive to be good citizens at this time of dire beauty. His most recent book is This Brilliant Darkness, A Book of Strangers. And I love what was written about it. Known for immersion journalism that is more immersed than most people are willing to go, and for a prose style that is somehow both fierce and soulful, Jeff Charlotte dives deep into the darkness around us and awaiting us. Whoa, oh, we need that. Welcome, Jeff Charlotte.
Hi, Darren.
Hi. So, yes, diving deep into the darkness around us and awaiting us. Have you by any chance read Mary Trump's book?
You know, I confess I did buy a copy, and but I have not read it yet.
I'm listening on Audible. I was like, okay, let's put the. I fell asleep listening to it. It's really great, but it's very kinned to yourself. It's extremely deep offering. You know, a lot of times in dysfunctional families, along comes somebody who metabolizes the poison. She's doing it, but she talks about the deep darkness, the deep darkness that was, you know, invited into the world through this neurotic family, and now that they're doing it to the nation. Anyway, it's very. I just wanted to put that on there too. So, yeah. So I was just telling the team also about the two things of the worst and the best of America being invoked today. Trump's tweet, you know, maybe I'll delay the election, you know. And then the honoring of John Lewis, again, feeling ourselves etched against his dedication. And Obama did a resounding, you know, votes, and I mean, all of that. So here we are. And however you want to begin, I have my well-worn copy of The Family right next to me with many underlined notes, but about a dominating religious cult, and we are in a cult now too, right?
You know, I have to admit, I don't use the word cult myself.
Okay.
I think out of sort of academic religious studies in which I have a foot or a toe, the term that they sometimes use, which is sort of anodyne, is new religious movement. But to me, what's sort of interesting is not to sort of think in terms of a cult, which is to say this is somehow other than me, look at those crazy people and so on. But whether it's at the level of the fundamentalism of the family or the sort of deep dysfunction of the Trump regime, I think it's worth us thinking about how is this a system of which I'm a part, and I might be an unwilling part of it. But I can't just sort of say, oh, look at that weirdness over there. I'm in this thing. I have to engage, and I have to shape, and I have to try and struggle for democracy. So some people use the word cult. It's fine. It's not my term.
No, thank you. I actually am completely in accord. I only used the word cult in our tweet because it was what would fit in. You're right. We throw the word cult into the cauldron. Yeah, absolutely, because what you're introducing is crucial, complicity. Whatever's going on, we are contributing creative complicitous chi. We're all in this dream together. And then let me toss this to you, but if we recognize that, then we have the necessity and opportunity to inhale back, going, I'm inhaling back my authority, lest we be authoritarian, and my complicitous chi, you know, and exhaling over here, you know. But we are so given what you said, in which I'm in complete accord, are there things you want to tease from The Family? And it's also a Netflix documentary, right?
It is a Netflix documentary. It's a 5-part Netflix documentary. The things that I want to tease from it. Let me follow your lead on this conversation. This is an organization. It's the oldest and most influential Christian conservative organization. Goes back to 1935 when the founder had what he believed was a vision and conversation with God, in which God told him that Christianity had been getting it wrong with its focus on the poor, the suffering, the down and out, that those whom God cared about most are those whom the family calls the up and out, the elites, those who are wealthy or in political power and enjoy those privileges. from their point of view, because God has put them there, whether they are nice people or not. And that helps explain their sort of their embrace of Trump and fundamentalism's embrace of Trump. It's not about whether you're a good person. It's not about whether you're a pious person. It's whether God wants to use you to achieve a certain end. So that's what the family is. They organize one event every year called the National Prayer Breakfast. That's their only sort of visible event. The rest of the time, they're dedicated to working behind the scenes with congressmen and business leaders. There's a great article in a recent New Yorker by Jane Meyer, the author of Dark Money, where she picks up and pulls the thread on one member of their board of directors, Ronnie Cameron, who is a billionaire and one of Trump's biggest financial backers, and looking at the way he uses his Christian activism through the family to pursue what is the great Christian project he has. It's deregulation of his industry, which is the poultry industry. It's getting rid of laws that stop him from causing violence to his own workers, from overworking them, from taking money from them. And he sees all that as in the way of what the family calls biblical capitalism, this idea that the rich getting richer is actually what the Bible wants. So that's what the family is. That's that work I was working on for many years. I say, I mean, I'll sort of follow your lead and I can tell you about it. It's not what I'm working on right now. So
go wherever you want. This is a democratic show. I leave things and then you go, no, what I'm working on now is, what are you working on now? I mean, I get an alert every time you send a tweet, right? So you're very busy. So I'm following and you are, you know, wanting to direct our attention to the dire danger, like we're in danger. And how do we strategize and look at this naked power grab? Even just you can count on this, whatever the regime. Trump now wants $321 million to renovate the White House, and it's like, no, you're leaving. No, and Melania is going to redo the Rose Garden like as it was for Jackie Kennedy. It's like, no, you cheap, churlish, cruel grifter. You know, we want to see you frog marched out of the White House. But you have been directing our attention to danger, and I don't know if that's where you wanted to go. What are you working on now? Let's go there.
I can talk about the Trump administration. I'm working on a long-term book project that has nothing to do with any of this right now. So, and may we all be free to work on projects that are not so urgent and of the moment politically. But I think maybe the most recent work was a story for Vanity Fair magazine. I spent the fall traveling around to Trump rallies, looking at how the religion of the Trump rally had changed since 2016 when I reported on from the New York Times magazine. And, you know, the sort of the takeaways that I want people to have for that, and especially, you know, all my friends and colleagues and comrades on the progressive left, is to recognize that Trump's strength, even as it is waning right now in this particular moment, is real. And I think there's a lot of reassurance that a lot of people do. So I would go around to these rallies, I'd come back and I would talk to friends, and they say, oh, it's just paid actors. No one really goes to these rallies. So I did a little social media survey. I got about 1,000 responses. I asked, do you think the crowds at Trump rallies are A, paid actors, so-called AstroTurf, or B, are they smoke and mirrors, camera tricks that make them look bigger, or three, is it real? 75% of that 1,000 of those 1,000 respondents said, it's paid actors or camera tricks. There's no way all those people are really there. Well, I'm here to tell you, they are real. They are big, deep blue Broward County, 22,000 people came out, and they must have just been the best actors I've ever seen if they were paid actors. They were real. I think some of us take solace from the small crowd at that Tulsa rally that Trump had a little while ago that was televised. And that was good news. It was good that at least some Trump supporters were not willing to risk their lives or lose it, as Herman Cain did today, to attend. But we have to remember simultaneously that rally was watched by more people on television than had ever seen a Trump speech before. So the strength is still there. His base may be shrinking, but there is a very potent and powerful base. I am mildly optimistic that he can be beaten, and mildly optimistic that he'll leave if he is beaten, because those are two separate questions. But it's no sure thing at all. And I think we need to remember, and when I look at the arc of sort of Trumpism and how it's evolving, and I spend more time than I wish I did in these sort of murky circles, it's turning more poisonous, more dangerous now. It's getting much more violent than the press is reporting. And whether that's in the violence of a Trump speech, most of which doesn't get reported, or whether it's in the violence that we saw on the streets in Portland when Trump basically used paramilitaries to attack political dissidents, that's accelerating. And some people say, are you concerned that Trump might turn to violence or there might be violence? The violence is, we've already turned to violence. We have already crossed that Rubicon. We have already crossed the line into low scale, low intensity, thank God, still low intensity, but real simmering violent conflict, whether it's in Portland or it's in the 68, I believe, and counting, car ramming attacks launched against protesters, against liberal protesters by right wingers, many of whom are Trump supporters, since May. Since May, 68, and those are terrorist attacks. 68 terrorist attacks against liberal protesters since May. The violence has already begun, and Trump is calling for more. He is calling for more. So, maybe that's sort of what I want to say, is I want people, I know people, everyone's on, we're on the same page, we don't like Trump. We're not on the same page of recognizing that there is real power, and that the norms that we have counted on won't necessarily protect us. And that as his electoral strength wanes, his authoritarian danger increases.
Yes. And there was the Bannon Trump tweet in 2014, February 10th, in which Bannon goes, "I am Lenin. I want to destroy the government structure," and and Trump tweets back, "Yes, and the way to do it is when the economy's in the tank and the country's gone to hell, we want riots. Riots will bring it back to how it was when it was great." Right. So that's his, as you say, that's his playbook. That's all. It's a very limited. And it is, you know, it's what America has done to other countries. Kermit Roosevelt, for very little money, on his second attempt, installed the Shah and overthrew democracy in Iran with just a couple $1,000s to hire thugs to beat up the press and beat up street people on the street. It was, here it is. But yes. So I was at the Republican convention, and both conventions actually too, but there's a lot to say about that. But how do you think it's changed? You said you covered it 2016. So, and it's what, smaller, more violent? That's what you're saying?
In this Vanity Fair story, what I report is in 2016, when I went around those rallies, the religion of the Trump rally, which wasn't much reported on by the press, the religion of the Trump rally was what's called the prosperity gospel. And this is an American religious movement, or began in America. And it's sort of what you see on televangelists when they say, send me a love offering of $100 and God will bless you tenfold, something like that, right? It's about getting rich. It's, by the way, not exclusively right wing. There are churches that are, there's black Pentecostal churches that are in many other ways progressive, but also adhere to a prosperity gospel. But that was the sort of the tenor of the Trump rally. You vote for Trump because he's rich. God has blessed him. He's rich. So if you support him, maybe you'll get rich too, right? And that's this aspirational kind of theology. That was the main religious promise. That was 2016, 2020. What's changed? Well, now Trump has been in power for some time, and the narrative is no longer MAGA, make America great again. It is, as he changed it to, keep America great. And it's no longer about seizing power. It's about holding on to power. And the threat is no longer your poverty, which Trump is going to somehow magically heal you of. The threat is an enemy within. And this became the tenor and the religion of the Trump rally, is talking about invisible enemies within. And it becomes so dominant. And I would see, I saw in Hershey, Pennsylvania, I went to a rally, I think about 15,000 people. The press was there. When the press goes to these rallies, they sit in a metal cage in the middle of the arena floor. Right. And there's always a moment at which Trump sort of points to them and says, look at those scum, those lying people, and the crowd turns. And it's a great, fun moment for the Trump believers. They get to scream at CNN and so on. The press is somewhat complicit in agreeing to act as a prop, or lazy, I think is the right word. You go out in that crowd and you encounter something different. And you encounter something the press doesn't report on. At that Hershey rally, the only line that Trump said that the press reported on the next day was that Trump had made a joke about staying more than 4 more years, and maybe he'd stay for 8 or 10 or 15, that maybe he wouldn't leave. And he says, I'm joking, not joking, which is this kind of rhetorical maneuver he has to introduce a possibility as a joke. But am I joking? That's the only thing the press reported on. What they didn't report on was the nearly 20-minute tirade he went on of extreme violent rhetoric describing this threat, claiming that Democrats are combing the prisons in cities looking for sexual predators whom they can then release into the countryside, and describing the things these people are doing. And of course, this is a racialized narrative. Implicit is they are taking black and brown people and releasing them to the countryside, which in the Trumpian narrative is white. And I can't repeat some of the language. It was talking about decapitations, carving out heart, but going on at length like a horror movie, like a slasher flick. And to the crowd, it's both horrifying and titillating. And if you believe that's happening, what wouldn't you do to stop it? If you believe your differences with the Democratic Party are not one of policy, but on the one hand, you have these policies, and on the other hand, you have people who are raping children and disemboweling people and decapitating people, well, suddenly anything is licensed. And that wasn't reported, and I think it's not reported, because so many of my colleagues in the political press see it as just rhetoric. If you're in the political press, you're geared toward campaign statements and policies. You're not paying attention to theology, to performance. But that is actually the core of Trumpism. That's what animated the 15,000 people in the arena. That's what filled them with rage and a kind of very dark ecstasy.
Right. Well, there's a million things in what you say. I mean, it's like the Bannon Trump, you know, Bannon ignited Trump's chaos lust, right? And then, you know, with alternative press, of which this network, Pacifica and KPFA, is one, call 1-800-439-5732 to keep us as a place we can gather. But yeah, in real news, different places, yeah, the Tulsa speech, you know, with its very kinky rape fantasies, right, as that you mentioned, it's like, ooh, and then the press in the cage, it's cage fighting. So all of this, and then, you know, we've hosted Gary Lachman, who does a great history of prosperity, Norman Vincent, I mean, everything, both sometimes liberal and sometimes not, but his book, Dark Star Rising, Magic and Power in the Era of Trump. And to toss to you, when I left the Republican convention, I did sink to my knees going, oh, no, oh, we're getting smoked on what should be our strong suit of story and metaphor and invitation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's inviting them to mob mine, going, here, permission to do the worst things, you know, so we got to invite the best, right? But Hillary had no story craft, and it's like, oh. Because there was Trump, you know, again, like A Face in the Crowd, that great movie with Andy Griffith as a Trump but smarter person. But it is in the American dynamic, the con who does invite, you know, the thing. And then back to, you know, your craft and whatever it is you may be working on now, but the power of story, and how do we magnetize that? Because Trump was up there saying, you know, I will bring to you the greatest dream you've had since you were born. Right? It's talk like that. We go right, and the so yeah, it's compressed. It's more violent. It's more reactive. It is dangerous. But to toss back to you, the kind of evolutionary necessity is the dementors, right, and are only self-referential. The election's going to be stolen because we're trying everything. But they do horrible, cruel things. Oh, my God, the children, in cages, everything, and which makes us, right? But they feed on that. They feed on polarity. So to be snookered, and you did a great corrective, right? Not a cult word. To be snookered into polarity is to feed the dementors, right? So how do you think of spiral, how shall we all, aspiring to be good citizens, dedicate to spiraling out of polarity and maybe also substituting the word you, the word we for you. We are going to do this. Here we are doing. I mean, do you have strategies? I know you have alertness to danger. Do you have strategic response?
I have to admit, I never do have strategies because I'm interested in storytelling. I'm interested in storytelling.
Well, that's a strategy.
And so I count on others to do the strategy. But the one thing I'll say that's interesting as a storyteller and looking at what's there, what's fascinating is that now there's a possibility of beating Trump with a candidate that I'm not too excited about, Joe Biden, but nonetheless, better. And look, Joe Biden is not a good storyteller. He doesn't have a good story to his campaign, and it still might win. Because right now what's happening is Trump, and here's the thing that I think a lot of folks on the left, and you said it, he's smoking us on story. They don't understand. They see Trump, and he doesn't talk the way that you're supposed to if you're a figure of gravitas. And, he is one of the most skilled orators I've ever seen. I don't like what he says. I don't like how he says it. But his timing when he is on is impeccable. I have seen a crowd of 20,000 people follow him for 2 hours and turn at each moment. And so many of the things that we dismiss in that Tulsa rally, for instance, which a lot of people saw, he did a 15-minute riff on his ability to hold a glass of water. Remember, there was that sort of thing going on at West Point and had he slipped on a ramp and had he had difficulty holding a glass of water. So we did this 15-minute routine, and he was making jokes about it and so on. And people said, this is a guy who's really losing it. They've never been in a Trump crowd and understand that what that is a comic routine. And it's working. And it's working at building a kind of intimacy. So that's real. He's really good at it. He's a hell of a lot better than Joe Biden. He's a hell of a lot better than Joe Biden. Or unfortunately, the world is telling a more powerful story than Trump can right now. I wish I could say it was democracy that was beating Trump, but it's not. It's coronavirus is beating Trump. The virus is telling a more potent and more powerful story, and Trump is flailing around because he knows how to call people names. He knows how to destabilize them. The virus doesn't care. He can call it this racist term, the China virus, and it doesn't lose its footing. It keeps telling its horrible story, and its horrible story is beating his story. So the strategy right now, I think, for us is to not let down our guard, to not make any assumptions. As I was just speaking last night with some people who are doing the strategy, a group called Working America that goes out and does canvassing connected to the labor movement. And, they said, Biden is beating Trump, 7 to 9 points. You just shouldn't feel comfortable about that. This is a guy who, given the circumstances right now, should be losing by 30 points. So pay attention. That 9-point lead, that's not big, that's small. It needs to be bigger.
No, it is, and Herman Cain died today, and the final indignity is that Trump was touting another pizza brand today. Right, going, it is a grotesque ongoing what fresh hell is this cartoon. So yes, there is that, and so where I go is, well, we are electing a story, right? We are electing a story, and the significant gathering to honor John Lewis, which did lead up to Obama pretty smoking, taking it on, and the power of voting and the power of Wolf, and honoring the beautiful diversity of our true citizens. So it was a relief to have sanity, you know, emerge. And it is also part of John Lewis's dynamic, this great folk hero from the South, High John the Conqueror, whose saying was, we're going to find a way out of no way and hit a straight lick with a crooked stick, right? So it's like finding a way out of no way. And that there's some part of us, you know, that wants to come alive, that feeds on discrepancy, right? What is, what should be, you know? And that's part of what John Lewis was being honored for and addressing. So, you know, but I in reading about, you know, your book, This Brilliant Darkness, I like the copywriter said that you are known for immersion journalism, more immersed than most people are willing to go, and for a prose style that is somehow both fierce and soulful. Jeff Charlotte dives deep into the darkness around us and awaiting us. So in your journeys, I mean, you say you're not a strategist, but are you gathering things about what gets us through the dark? What gets us through the underworld? What do we come to rely upon? Even, you know...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what that book, This Brilliant Darkness, is about. And it's... there's a politics to that book in the sense that the longest sort of the heart of the story is about an unarmed black man named Charlie Africa Kunang, who was held down by the LAPD in 2015. He's a homeless man, and they were responding to a call, and they held him down, pinned him to the sidewalk, pressed a gun into his chest, and shot him 6 times. That didn't get nearly as much attention as some of the other unfortunate martyrs, partly because Charlie was homeless. He was an immigrant. He was from Cameroon. He had led a rough life. He was using drugs, and yeah, he did resist at the end. People said, "Oh, but he resisted." Imagine you're sitting there on the sidewalk one day, and a group of men with guns surround you and start hitting you and pin you down. Are you supposed to say, "Ah, I certainly don't want to resist this"? Charlie struggled for his life, and they murdered him anyways. That's the heart of that book, but the heart of what I really want to understand with Charlie and with all those stories is to understand the life that was lost, understand the life that endures, to read these stories not as tragedies, because I look at this, I say, to me it seems... It's a challenge for us as storytellers, right? Because we want to find the form to tell the story. But the temptation of tragedy is a sort of the retrospective reassurance of consolation that it couldn't have been otherwise, that things as they are had to be, right? And the work of imagination is always to remember that it could have been otherwise, even when it wasn't. It's not. Look, it can't always be turned around. Charlie was murdered. We can't unmurder him. Any justice we could get from the LAPD, and some was gotten, doesn't change that. George Floyd isn't coming back. The damage that Trump has done is real. That book, This Brilliant Darkness, begins and ends. It's about 2 years of reporting, where I ended up taking pictures of everyday people and just talking to everyday people. Most of them wouldn't, not such dramatic stories, they're not newsworthy stories, the deep, rich, living stories, taking their photographs and writing their stories. Not Humans of New York, which I'm not a big fan of, that's another conversation, but in a deeper way, maybe. And it begins, the reason I did this, it begins with my father's heart attack. My father, with whom I was very close, had a heart attack. And 2 years later, when I finished the book, I wrote what I thought was the last sentence. I pushed myself back from the desk, and I'm like, that's it. And I felt a pressure in my chest. And at age 44, I had a heart attack. I survived. I survived to tell the tale. But there's a little dead wall in my heart. Scarred, dead walled. And friends trying to be supportive will say, well, you know, you'll heal. No, I won't. That's dead. That's not coming back. Part of how we endure, part of how we hold on to hope, part of how we can rebuild if we can get past Trumpism, is to not live in denial of the damage done. To grieve it, to mourn it. I look even now, 155,000 Americans dead and nearly a million around the globe. So many dead. of coronavirus, what is the key activism we could be doing right now in some ways? Mourning the dead. Yeah. What can you do? Mourn the dead. Put their faces out there. You don't have to, you don't have to do this and say, look, Trump, what you did. Just mourn the dead. Recognize what was lost. Recognize what was lost, because you can't begin to imagine what could be gained until you have taken a real inventory of the damage done.
Yes, that's powerful, good, beautiful. No, and I do appreciate in your tweet feed at Jeff Charlotte, Sharlett, which I that you are retweeting the biographies of the notices of who's died, because it is intimacy. All these stories extinguished. You know, and to honor that, and you know, our buddy Martin Prechtel says, for when he came back to this country, he said he'd forgotten that Americans know little about grieving. Well, there is grieving. You know, the powerful surgence of George Floyd and the graffiti and the movement. You know, when he called out for his mama, all the mothers were summoned. And what you say, you know, grief expressed becomes a sacrament of kinship and embrace. You know, we embrace the subject of your book. We embrace that, you know, if we have a name, we have a relationship. And I think that's part of what you're doing.
Yes, but, I think that the powerful mourning work of all the folks in the street in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing, the powerful grieving and mourning work is an astonishing moment. It was a moment that John Lewis certainly recognized and understood. And I would add to it, and I would encourage everyone, that mourning, that grieving, that belongs to everybody. And you can say, well, I haven't lost anyone to coronavirus, or I haven't lost anyone to police violence, or yes, you have. Yes, you have. Yeah, it's time for you to expand your understanding of kinship, and not to claim the sorrows of others as your own, but to recognize that we are in community, and that grieving that you, that all of us have been wounded. When I say to this, when I try to think about this, whenever I read one of these heartbreaking stories of someone, just an ordinary everyday person, lost the coronavirus unnecessarily, because this didn't have to happen. This is no act of God. Unnecessarily, I try to remember, I say, I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm sorry for our loss, because that person was part of the beloved community. That person was part of the world that we lived in. That person, in all their complexity, and by the way, this extends, one of the things that I've seen that I think is ugly and I wish it would stop, every now and then you see a kind of celebration of death when someone dies of coronavirus who was a denier of coronavirus. Well, look, I can be angry with that person, but I'm not happy they died. I'm not happy Herman Cain died. I did not like Herman Cain. I did not like politics. He chose to go to that rally without a mask. What a fool. And it's a loss. It's a loss. And it's a sorrow. And to hold on to that, because that sorrow and that loss, that's our humanness. I'm not giving up my humanness for Herman Cain. I'm not giving up my humanness for a COVID denier. I'm going to hold on to that. And I think that is something that I guess when you say, do I have a strategy? No, I don't have a strategy. Let's invest in Michigan is where this election is. I don't have any of those kinds of strategies.
No. We're not. It's a bigger story. But yes,
the bigger story.
The bigger story is
very beautifully when you spoke of that kinship. Yeah, no.
And also just the John Lewis, all of him being honored, and that, you know, at the age of 8, he began to practice preaching to his chickens. But he didn't, he'd go, hello, chickens, and he loved them, he wouldn't eat them. And he would also, in the morning at the age of 8, go, you know, hello, chickens, hello, air, hello, grass, hello, wind, hello, this, you know, that's how he began honoring everything. And absolutely, as you say, we want to put some things on our work table. We celebrate no death. And that is Osama bin Laden. I mean, no death is to be celebrated at all. An exquisite, unique, complex experiment, maybe, that went awry, you know, but again, the story, You know, and it is from the Arabian Nights that said people need stories more than they need bread. And the stories that you retweet, that many are, to honoring, you know, because poignancy is kinship. It's like, oh, the head of critical care in Baltimore, you know, who had a precondition, but, you know, and his husband said, don't go in, you know, and he's like, I've got to do what my team is doing, you know. And they all were touching him as he died, all 20 people. And we go, oof. And, you know, it is, in some way, I mean, we can play with it, many qualities of grief. We can't live through the dead, but we can invite those qualities that we admire to be part of our etching, part of our increased dedication, and part of our increased dedication to life. So you looked over the edge, right? You wrote your book and the deep things. Your father had a heart attack, then you have heart attack, and some part of your heart is you said dead. I like thinking gone to spirit world, having donated parts of myself in that realm too, going, all right, whatever the metaphor. But so you have looked deeply, you know, and to all people who look over the edge and then come back with a sense of what's really important, and we could say kinship. And then maybe, yeah, you know, again, through the power of story, you know, may a tsunami of reverent kinship. I love my collaborator sometimes, Deborah Felmuth, who lives in Syria and Vermont, but she said one of the 99 names of God is Salam, peace, is how it's translated. And she said, but in Arabic, it's not the absence of war, it's the presence of oneness, Salam, right? And so we want to waft that into the memosphere. The sort of dark, esoteric prosperity, Norman Vincent Peale kind of dynamic that Trump is a master con, you know, to play that, but to invite the kind of worst again into mob mind. It was very like Shirley Jackson's The Lottery at the Republican convention. One on one, there was movement, and I think part of what I'm dedicated to is talking across borders, and that does require composting impediments to kinship, composting condescension. Oh, all of us progressive team, right? Because condescension means we all go down together, and then to have a actual conversation, and you know, and conversing. I've liked engaging and reversing the polarity with some people that one might have felt like, oh, Trump supporter, whatever, by just going, what's your definition of the purpose of government? It's like, oh, no, you know, let's craft that. Let, you know, again, disrupting and changing. So I'm going to have to reluctantly release you to dedicate to keeping this station alive with financial contributions so we can host you again. But is there any well-wishing that you would like from this conversational dance about your ongoing work right now?
Well, I'll honor your fundraising drive. My well-wishing will go toward Pacifica and keeping these forums for conversation, for interaction, for kinship alive. And, you know, we're talking about storytelling, and no one ever told a good story by being closed off to the experience of others. So I hope the listeners will support this radio station and so that you can keep doing the good work you're doing.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff Charlotte, and go back to your, well, you're busy, you're putting things out into the world, you're addressing everything, and thank you for your indefatigable perspicacity. There you go.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. That was our ally, Jeff Charlotte. Again, really useful book, The Family, still useful, delineating many important things. You know, what is the heart? You know, he has done many things. He's the nationally best-selling author of The Family, described by Barbara Ehrenreich as one of the most compelling and brilliantly researched exposés you'll ever read. It's true. And many other things that we want to honor. I do want to say also his Netflix, the docuseries based on his books, The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, and C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. We go, okay, that's 5 episodes, so there's that. So, team, let's come back to our dedicated kahooting, too. So I like the ongoing experiment of our KPFA team. This summer fund drive, we're doing something a little different, they say. We are giving audio as a gift to everyone who subscribes, everyone who pledges anything. we'll get a link to our new Abolish Racism audio collection. All of the books that go along with this collection from KPFA will be available as premiums. There we go. And you've heard before in past shows, recent shows too, it's, you know, Patrice Cullors with Cat Brooks in Oakland, When They Call You a Terrorist, a Black Lives Matter memoir. Angela Davis, I danced with her at Obama's second inauguration. It's a small thing. Oh, hi. Hello,
hi.
Adorable.
That guy was great.
He is a deep delving guy, and again, it is all hands on deck team, and this is where we gather our council, and just for the fun of it, you know. And then I'm so glad you're here, Chris. It's wonderful. But there is there's a resonance. The show today, as we convened at 2:00, is very specifically kinned to November 3rd election chart. So I just like all of us, you know, what we're pledging to, you know, democracy alive and sanity. And yeah, everybody said, yes, Biden or whatever, we're electing a story. It's our next move. Magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything. First, that's like, no, you cannot have $321 million to renovate the White House. You cheap, churlish, cruel grifter. No, and animating the desirable vision. So, what I'd also said is anybody who gives anything, yes, you can have all these wonderful things, and Chris has more announcements of swag, I'm sure you do, that you can have as a thank you gift. But also, if you pledge anything, email me info@coyotenetworknews.com, and I will send you back things, because we're organizing here on the station and backstage too. You know, how shall we take action, strategize, and animate the desirable in these crucial weeks, months, 400 years before us. So 1-800-439-5732, or pledging online, kpfa.org. And go ahead, surprise us. There we go. And I hand it back to you, Chris, to exhort.
Well, let's see. I'm just looking for you. I'm supposed to have the details about this.
I can thank people. I have people to thank.
Oh,
how exciting.
Well, good. Well, I was just going to say that the audio collection is absolutely free to anyone who donates anything, and we will send you an email link through which you will then be able to download, however, as a podcast on your telephone, whatever, however you do those things, get it an MP3, whatever it is, you will get a link through the email. And we also have a collection of because all of these folks came to town and gave talks for KPFA, benefits for KPFA, and they all had written books, which is why they were roaming the planet and showing off their books, which as well they might do. And we have all of those books as well, 9 books available. Now, those will cost $1,000 for all 9 books if you would like these brilliant treatises from these incredible authors on the topics of abolishing racism. That's what it's about. Abolish racism. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-KPFA, and online at kpfa.org. And a $1,000 donation right now would be fabulous.
And very witty.
Yes, for many reasons. Angela Davis,
many reasons.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, Paul Ortiz, Johnny Powell, Isabel Wilkerson, and Patrice Cullors. Brilliant speakers and writers all.
Right. No, that is a wonderful thing, and I do love thanking people. There's a couple of people at the top of the hour.
Oh,
they
good.
Might belong to the other show, but we're claiming them anyway. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, John, who's new. Thank you, fantastic Bernie. Oh, bless your heart. Thank you, Anonymous. Anonymous, we love Anonymous. We love Anonymous. And that's apparently it. Oh, and thank you, Ralph. There we go. All right, so now here we are exhorting further. So, you know, vote to vote. We're devoted to voting. I think we're voting for reality with everything we do and every dollar we spend anywhere. It's a manner of voting. You know, and this realm of, you know, altruism, you know, pledge for people who can't, and dogs. I hear a lot of dogs listen to this show. And also to our team, you know, again, beautiful Susan Shannon, who has been running the Tibetan Buddhist Ministry in San Quentin. San Quentin, we will be doing a show about San Quentin because it's under COVID. And we extend our kinship absolutely to a team, many powerful, beautiful beings in San Quentin that Susan, without any glamorization, has said, you know, the amount of transformative energy coming from those who have lost so much and been down so deep into the underworld, who are meditating and spreading things out. Anyway, so pledge for those beings. There we go. Pledge for their well-being, and for dogs and creatures and all who can't, but also for our dedication of cultivating all of our potencies. I love Dion Fortune, one of my auntie spirit mentors, honoring all mentors. You know, and she said they were engaged by the British government to all the ritualists of Britain to do pragmatic mysticism.
Hmm.
And she said part of our serenity is that we never wavered from our desirable vision and certainty of the outcome.
Ah.
You know, and she wrote that when bombs were falling. And this is part of what we're here to do, which is to be fully aware of the horror and the danger and to go right and steady. You know, what Jeff Charlotte was saying, tragedy, and I like a friend of mine, playwright, said, well, the essence of Greek tragedy is, it's going to get you. It did. Right? And you go, no, we want Act 5. As well, where you got to go down all the way into evil, Act 4, you know, where the horrible beings appear to be winning over life, you know, and then up. And that's our story crafting. That's why we gather here for 24 years, Chris.
It'll
be 24 years in early September. Holy moly, team. So again, 1-800-439-5732, because John Lewis said, you know, vote. This is the most important election of his life, and he's gone now, and our lives, no matter what. And it's true, the thing is, well, magic's a willingness to cooperate with everything, so, okay, we've got a cardboard cutout, you know, Biden. But the platform that Bernie worked on, not bad. Enormously better. We'll do.
Mm-hmm.
It'll do.
Mm-hmm.
It'll do. You know, there we go, okay. Not of course that we're a nonprofit radio station. We're not supposed to support anybody. It's just what the planet said. That's all the planets. The planets have an opinion about voting. So yes. So 1-800-439-5732. This as a place of gathering and cultivating all of our skills. All of our skills. It is a potent and beautiful time right now. You know, just for the fun of it. Our airwaves, you know, what is describing us, Mercury in Cancer, may our airwaves be dedicated to kinship and protecting life, you know, and remembering kinship and letting all the petty befoiblements go. It's Br'er Rabbit, right? There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate. Here we are, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. So we're a kin. We have a fantastic, dedicated, active, listening team. Woof, 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 woof. So reciprocal blessing, you know, whatever you can muster and vote to vote, you know, and just adding the Saturn, you know, by the pledging of this $5, by the pledging of this $500, by the pledging of this $5,000, may it be that, you know, and absolutely any amount is welcome. It's the action that we imbue with symbolic intention. May this give life to how we gather, to the Visionary Activist Show, to KPFA, to the Pacifica Network, to all who, you know, speak truth, be power as part of our dynamic, change one word and it's magic right away. So all of us here, you know, speak truth, be power, as John Lewis really embodied. So 800-439-5732 would be great. Oh, look, more people to thank. This is thrilling. And you helped me find the...
Well, you just reminded me of something that Jeff Charlotte said that I just was so... so meaningful to me, and near the end of what he was talking about, when he said about mourning the dead, that the key activism that we could do now is to mourn the dead. It's to recognize what is here and what there is to lose. And that's just what you're talking about. The knowledge of our kinship is one of the things that we've lost. And that is to be mourned. And it is to be reinvigorated, revived by the knowledge of it. Do not deny the damage done. And to accept it and acknowledge it, and to then build from there, from the truth, without it's so easy to get distracted because the dude is in the White House is so good at chaos and throwing things at you to keep you off your balance, and that's what gets everybody, like, I don't know what, running around like chickens with their heads cut off, or going to bed with the covers over their heads, which is my preferred spot.
No, but I have words, language. We are a language crafting team. Yes, we are. And yes, the chaos. What's the antidote to chaos? Deliberate. Deliberate, because it comes from libra, balance, and it comes from two verbs, libare, to liberate, and librare, to balance. So to be deliberate is to be in a state of liberating balance. And we go, all right, team, by pledging deliberately, 1-800-439-5732, that would be really good. But again, the antidote to chaos is deliberate. So everything we've ever studied or learned, or Tai Chi, you know, Sufi Aikido, all this syncretized, how do we practice that to invite the best? Come on, we're over here, you know, to spiral out of polarity. Please don't feed the Dementors. And to make, when life gives you demons, make demonade. That's part of what we're brewing here. And let me thank some people who are helping to brew demonade.
1-800-439-5732 if you'd like to be thanked. 1-800-439-5732.
Oh, we're on our way out. Okay, but thank you, Ralph. I might have thanked you before. And Cheryl and Joyce. Oh, that's great. New people. And Robert, yes, and Kim. And again, surprise us. 800-439-5732 or pledging online, kpfa.org. So I think we're done.
Well, thank you,
Chris.
It's remembering our connection, and that's what Caroline is so good at making fun. And that's the other thing, is fun is good.
Yes, we're be jaunty, even though fully informed, says Wendell Berry, and that's what we're doing. We
peek
over the
it.
Abyss. We embrace everything. We thank everybody. I thank Rod Akil, Bordop, and all the backstage team at KPFA, and thank you, Chris. And we are on our way. We will reconvene next week. And also, if you give anything, email me info@coyotenetworknews.com, and we can conspire further. Thank you.